Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is opened up for Madison! A thing of beauty! Johnson. Kulusevski!
Welcome to an international break podcast brought to you by New Spurs Order under the Touchline Fracker banner. I'll be your host once again, X-Pac, and I'll be joined for the first time by George, aka Durag Diaries. Again, welcome. This is my first podcast with you. I know you've already done one or two. But yeah, how are you doing on this fine Friday afternoon?
Yeah, man, I'm doing well. You know, I'd say I'm glad that there's no football after the battering we took last week. But yeah, no, I'm doing good. Good to be back. It's been a while. And yeah, feel very welcomed with the NSO team. And yeah, so it's all been good.
Any international football exciting you at all? There's a lot of buzz about this England-Brazil game where people have actually turned around and been like, actually, why are we even doing this? And obviously half the teams are pulling their players back to their own clubs because whatever means more.
Yeah, man, I'm of the type, but I generally don't like international football. I don't like watching it. I don't really have an affiliation to... I don't have the passion that I have for, like, Tottenham, for any international team. I can watch international football. Like, I support Italy. That's sort of where my background's from. And I watch them, but if they lose, it's like, they lost. Like, I don't really care. And it's the same for England. Like, I tried to support the Tottenham players. Like, when Harry Kane was playing, I was like, oh, Harry Kane scores, I'm happy. But apart from that, I don't really have an affiliation, so I just can't wait to get back to Premier League football, club football, and yeah, back where we belong, man.
Yeah, then we've got, you know, I think it's England playing Brazil at the time this audio obviously gets released, and people are just saying, like, I'm not even excited to watch Brazil anymore, even though we've got our own very Richie lad leading the line. Like, it's... I just remember actually being excited to watch Ronaldinho at Wembley, New Wembley, and then obviously we had that Jack Wilshere one-off performance for England. And that actually felt way more exciting than now. And yeah, even though England are essentially a super team now, I'm just not excited.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem with internationals is they squeeze the friendlies in to make... They make so many international breaks in the season that it just becomes watered down. And, like, the big games, like, we're doing a friendly against Brazil and it's, like, mid-season where you know the title challenge is on, there's everyone else is focused on other things. Like, this would be a massive friendly if this was in June, for example, just after the season. Like, that's when they should place them. But doing it mid-season at a time when... Champions League is on, like there's so much other bigger things going on, so it sort of takes away from the fact that this is England versus Brazil, like two of the biggest giants coming together. And like you said, you got the biggest players from Brazil, Vinicius, Rodrigo, R9.
If he's Neymar still... might as well be retired, but
but
that's a shame.
On the Euros will be good though, that'll be a nice spectacle.
Yeah, I'll be locked in for that for sure. As I say, I can't wait to get back to club football. And obviously, we've had a week to process our last game, our last result. But just to rewind back just a little bit, I mean, what were your expectations going into Fulham? As you know, we've got a nice melting pot of different opinions in the group chat where we've got more optimists and then you've got a few pessimists as well. No names either way. And... Yeah, a few people saw this. I think even the more pessimistic ones saw this as a fairly comfortable or favourable game. But how did you feel going into it?
Exactly that. Off the back of, obviously, the Crystal Palace and Villa games, where we walked away with, I want to say, great performances. I think the Villa was a really good performance. Crystal Palace, it was more of a flurry at the last 20, 30 minutes of the game. But
two
games where you say we walked away winners, and going into the next couple of games, I thought that we would have built upon that. And so we were growing in confidence. The team seems to be finding its feet, started to score goals again. Because there was a few weeks where we were struggling creatively. And I thought going into this Fulham game, I thought we were going to just boss Fulham, smack them off the park. I know we're away from home, but we'd saw the record. We beat them 8 times in a row at their ground. And like the expectation was that we'd maintain the levels that we'd got to. But it's sort of typical with the Spurs team. We're obviously going to get into it, but it's typical that it's sort of up and down. You get a good result, then a bad result. And yeah, no, I didn't expect this. Fulham is a good team, though. I must say, even prior to the game, like I do have respect for them. I did think that they were a decent side. They have some very good players and they've done this to a few of the biggest clubs. They haven't beat or pumped any of the other clubs like they've done to us, but they have got good results. I mean, they beat Man United, Old Trafford. I think they're unbeaten against Arsenal this season, or they got 2 draws, but they've had good performances against the good teams. So it's not all hurt, like writing them off and so on, but it is a game that we would expect to go over there and win, man.
Yeah, I was one of the ones that thought it'd be a comfortable win as well. I look at Fulham's team on paper, and on paper, minus the 2 or 3 players, I even said in the pod, I think they're largely looking like a championship team on paper. That might have been a bit harsh, but I don't know who this other center midfielder next to Palinha is. He ended up scoring. We'll get into it. Iwobi's decent. This Muniz guy's come out of nowhere. I still don't know who the hell he is, but he's actually really, really good.
Apparently he's been there for a few years, that Muniz. He's like he's been a youngster sort of working his way through, and now he's just burst onto the scene.
He's killing me in FPL, you know. I don't even know if you play, but I saw him come in. He scored a brace. I saw his price in FPL and I'm like, oh, I might actually have to whack him in. And a few of my other boys done it. Didn't want to look like I was copying them, so I held off. And he's just, he's been killing me ever since. And it's annoying. But he does look really good. I think, Spurs should probably have an eye on him in the summer, even. But we'll get on to his performance as well. I felt like Fulham's team on paper wasn't that great. But credit to Marco Silva. He's coached them very well. He's got players that suit the way he wants to play. They're a very cohesive unit as well. They seem to know each other really, really well. Like, this was largely the same team. Minus number 9. And that's the same one that I think it was Conte's last away win for Spurs, where Kane just managed to wrap a half chance to the edge of the box. And that was that very cagey game. We won. Like you alluded to earlier, we've got a very good history there. So, again, like even though they're very well coached, very cohesive, I still thought we'd be comfortable. But how did you feel the first, let's say, 20 minutes went?
Do you know what? The first 20 minutes weren't that bad. I was actually going to say, like, the first 20 minutes were decent. I think Dragusin, that was probably his best part of the game, was the first 20 minutes. He looked really well. He started to put his little, like, mark on Muniz. He fouled him a couple of times. He'd won the ball off him, and it looked like he was winning that 1v1 battle. But I just felt like Fulham, as the game went on, sort of the first five, first 10, we controlled the ball. We were moving it around. They generally didn't get a good touch of the ball. But then as the game sort of got close to that 20-minute mark, 15, 20 minutes, Fulham started scoring the game slowly. And you could see they were catching us on the counter. They're really quick. That's the one thing that I did notice when we was watching. Like, when they do turn on the pace, they just do a quick turn and they're straight down to the other end of the pitch. And they've got, like, the players like Anthony Robertson, Iwobi, driving the ball up the pitch that really helped them. But one of the key things that I think where we went horribly wrong was the midfield. We had no control in the midfield. The positional awareness from Basuma, I can't even lie. He's one player that I've been a big fan of him ever since he comes from Brighton, even when he had that bad season under Conte. And I was still saying, this is a baller. Like, he's a top player. He just needs to play in the right system. Right now, I can't lie. Like, he's not proving us and showing us the levels that he done for the first 10 or so games at the start of the season. He's been nowhere near those levels for a long time. And I'd actually look at replacing him in the summer, because some of these performances have been absolutely atrocious. Like, he's not earned himself the starting position in that number six. He doesn't really look comfortable in there. And he was actually at fault for quite a few of the goals. We'll get into it a bit after. But the start of the game, he looked okay. But still, again, I still found that we were too open in midfield. I think there was a screenshot that came into the group chat of there's like a little box. And when they're coming on the counter and you saw there was literally no midfield at all. There was just Fulham players, our defence, them going on the counter, and no one in the middle. That's the number six's job. As a number six, you're supposed to sit there and protect the defence, know when to go forward, know when to pull back. You have to be, your football IQ needs to be one of the best in the team. Basuma's missing that part about his game, and it's killing us. It really killed us in this Fulham game.
Yeah, it was weird as well, because we know he's got the IQ. We know he's got the on-the-ball ability. And you look at someone like Jorginho, who's been killing it at Arsenal, obviously, since he's come back into that sixth role after the winter break. And it just shows you don't necessarily need to be a very good kind of athlete, in the sense that you can lose like the odd 50-50, but as long as you kind of help out your defence, pick the ball up in better areas, you can set the tempo a little bit better, help out someone like Dragusin, who was struggling a little bit, but we knew that about him. I don't necessarily blame him that much, because we've got him playing on his unfavoured side. We know what his strengths and weaknesses are, especially if you're one of his teammates, you're playing with him day in, day out. You know his strengths and weaknesses. Kind of just drive in there and just get a bit more of that dog in you. Like, sometimes it is about the intangibles, and just be smart enough to at least as well just show us an option for your man, and take responsibility for some of the build up, because as hard as we were off the ball, we couldn't set any kind of rhythm or tempo. And every time we looked to have an easy pass on or a quick layoff for a one or two touch, we seemed to just make the wrong decision, look to just take an extra touch to carry it a little bit further. Maybe Basuma definitely wasn't the only culprit of this, by the way.
Yeah, definitely. I'd say Maddison was really bad as well. I think actually Saar was okay. I think he had a decent performance. In fact, he wasn't horrible. He weren't as bad as the others. But I think Maddison, he just wasn't at the levels that we know he can be at. I think he got maybe overcrowded in midfield. João Paulinho done a really good job of stopping him and sort of not letting us progress any of our attacks.
Yeah, and that's fair. And then Iwobi was obviously doing a really good job helping him out as well. He was just everywhere. Like, he wasn't necessarily like that great when he was on the ball, but honestly, everywhere. to be fair to him. And yeah, it means more to him, I guess, being ex-Arsenal. A lot of people have said Ange should have changed something in the first half where, yeah, I think it's an easy thing to say, but from the 30th, I think maybe the 25th minute to like the 35th to 40th minute, even like just before their first goal, from the 25th minute up to their first goal, I felt like we actually did get a little bit of a foot in the game. Managed to sustain a little bit of pressure, created a few openings and had a few good little half chances through Madison and Son. And yeah, it just felt like their game plan ended up breaking us down in the end. Not only was it countered, they would just flood players forward on the flanks, draw our centre midfielders out wide. And yeah, it managed to tell in the end.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think our team showed a bit of ignorance and a bit of arrogance in that game, like because we didn't respect Fulham enough in that sense. Because there was a lot of the times, and like you said, when we was going forward, the whole team's bombing forward. Basuma's going forward, Sarr's going forward, Madison's going forward, and it's like there was no protection for the defense. And
none.
The problem with what kept happening quite a few of the times is we do tend to move the ball side to side, like that's sort of how we play. So when we were doing that, we'd get caught in that moment and then they would click back on the transition, catch us on the counter. And then like you saw for that first goal, Anthony Robson run down the left side, crossed it in. And do you know what? It was put, like you said, I'm not really looking at Dragusin to say that it was a horrible performance or it's his fault or anything like that. But it was poor marking for the first goal. He should have been on Muniz, literally on his right shoulder, should have saw him there and managed to suss that one out on where the ball was going. But it's one of those things, his first start, new game, young lad, like he's probably just lost his focus in the moment. But I don't really fancy him on the left side. I know he's not a left-sided player and he did come in sort of deputised for Romero. But I think going forward, the left-sided, if Ben Davies is available, put Ben Davies there.
Fair. Even for Luton. I don't know, we'll get into that, or maybe even like next week. But obviously, going into half-time now, if you're Ange, I mean, what do you do? Like, would you have made any changes, any kind of tweaks? Because as I say, I still feel like we made good progress just towards the end of the first half, even just before the goal. Okay, we conceded first, but we've done that a number of times already this season and just come back, so... With that said, and obviously Basuma is still drowning, but like you alluded to, contributed to good performances against Palace and against Aston Villa. With all that said, would you have made any changes or tweaks?
No, like you said, I didn't think that we needed to make any immediate changes at halftime. I did think it was something that's like... Like usual as a manager, if there's no change within the first 15 minutes, it gets to like the 55th, 60th minute. And it's not looking better. That's when you make the change. I mean, we've seen, like I said, pretty much most of our games this season, we've come out of half-time and we blitz people. We come out, we get two goals back-to-back, and all of a sudden the game's changed and we're back in control. And that's sort of what I thought would happen. I thought, look, I'm just going to have a team talk. These lads are going to come out and it's going to be a different game. But as soon as we come out of the half-time, there was nothing. There was no change. It's pretty much back to normal. Fulham's just pressing us. They've got us... pegged back into our box, and they looked like the team that was more up for it. And I don't really, I think Ange could have been flexible. He could have made a change at halftime. It might have altered the game a little bit, but I didn't really look at him and say, look, Ange is the problem or Ange was the reason we didn't get any better in that game. I look at the players on the pitch and just say, look, they didn't turn up. It wasn't good enough, because even if we made the change at halftime, let's just say Basuma come off and it might have helped us gain a bit more control in the midfield, I still think that there was many other players on that pitch that just weren't performing up to the level that we needed them to.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's what I was... I agree as well. That's what I alluded to earlier with just the players just making so many bad decisions in build-up. It was very, very strange. I've seen no changes made. I think Bentancur might have been the first sub. Coming up with Højbjerg for Madison, who I feel like he must have been hooked, because I didn't feel like he he had any injuries or anything like that. He hasn't been pulled back from international duty yet. So, yeah, must be completely fine. I'm trying to think who Højbjerg came on for now. Might have been
Højbjerg come on for Bissouma.
Bissouma got hooked as well.
Yeah, it was both of them got hooked off. I remember he come on as sort of, I guess Ange just thought was putting Højbjerg in there in that sixth role. He tends to sit back and just do the job in there. He'll protect the defence. But also I find with Højbjerg, he lets the game go past him. And that is exactly what happened. I was watching Bissouma because when I was watching, I watched some of the goals back because I just wanted to like focus in on them. And Bissouma was actually like at fault for quite a few of the goals. For the second goal, when Lukic had come sort of drifting in between, you know, when the ball come across and he got the flick on with the knee, there was no one marking. The problem was that Dragusin and Udogie both got dragged out wide to the winger. And then no one marked that in that middle space where Sasa Lukic come running in from. But the problem was that that guy come running past Bissouma, and Bissouma was just ball watching. He was literally just sat there ball watching, let him go past, and then they get that goal. And it is the exact same thing for the third goal. Ball watching, he got caught ball watching. His man right in front of him could have stopped it, but yeah, man, it was just horrible from him.
Yeah, it was a running theme throughout the game. You're right. See, off the ball, pretty bad day at the office for Bissouma. Do you see his best position as a number six for Spurs?
I thought so. At the start of the season, he really showed us levels. He really showed that, like, people were saying, like, he's been the best defensive midfielder in the league so far this season. And they wasn't wrong. I agreed with them. And I generally thought going forward, he would be good in that position. I did notice when Maddison got injured, he didn't look comfortable. He looked like he was looking for a man sort of hold his hand. And that's when the first signs of problems started to show. And then onwards from there, like you said, he's been a bit up and down. He's come back from AFCON and he's had a few good performances. But I'd probably say it's literally one or two good games where I'd say, look, this was a good game from Bissouma. The other ones sort of just been a passenger midfield. I think that his best position might come as an eight. I think he might be better in that box-to-box role, sort of moving, dribbling the ball forward up the pitch. But then the problem I have with that is that I don't think he has as many attributes as Sarr. I don't feel like he can cover as much ground as Sarr. I don't feel like he technically as good as Sarr, as sound as him on the ball. So I feel like the room for growth in Sarr is like here. He's got so much. He's got the ability to be a world-class player. I think Bissouma's sort of finding his level. And it's not as a starter in our team. Obviously, I might be wrong with this, and I'm not looking to jump the gun too early, but over a 3 to 4 month period of what I've seen of Bissouma, as well as last year, obviously, which I did write off, but it's just not been good enough. He's not shown the level that we need to sustain, especially in this system where we're all attack, all guns blazing. You need a top number six. I don't think he's the guy for us. I think we need someone to come in and someone who's going to specialise in that role because we are lacking that profile at the moment.
We are. I agree. And yeah, you'd have Tottenham mouthpieces and aggregator accounts leading us to believe we need another number eight, which, yeah, I fully agree with you. I think it has to be a number six in the summer. And I just don't really see us being linked with any, which is a little bit worrying. But I mean, yeah, we'll see.
Who would you like going forward throughout the season and until the rest of the season? Who do you prefer in the six out of him and Bissouma? Him and Bentancur, sorry.
I think Bentancur has got a high ceiling as a six once he's actually match fit. Just seeing how he was at Juve, albeit like it was a little over a handful of games, but when he was playing the six role, when the Sarri, especially, he was good. Could be a little bit lax in the first phase of build-up at times, but he's very good off the ball, very good at screening. He essentially played as a six for us under Conte as he first came in, and he was doing Højbjerg's job for him as well as his own. So I still think he can do that. He just needs to just be a bit more match sharp as well, because... Yeah. I just remember when he came back in that game against Aston Villa, while he was very good, he was very, like, rushed as well. And he just needs to call ahead in there just to know when to kind of stem the flow a little bit, when to attack. And for Bentancur coming back in that game, and then some of the other games I saw him play as a six, it was just always like pump forward, pump forward, pump forward.
Yeah.
Which is fine because he's still very good at that, right? But yeah, it just needs to be a little bit more controlled from him, I think. Whereas, yeah, I feel like obviously off the ball, he'd be better than Bissouma as well. Bissouma being a close second, I've also advocated for maybe Ange to maybe try and drop that like second eight a little bit deeper in certain games, because I don't feel like that compromises the Ange ball way of playing football either. I think it's just making a little bit of a concession. You essentially play with a double pivot or two sixes, whatever you want to call it, or whatever the new kind of buzzword to say it is now. I wouldn't mind seeing that as a little bit of control, because I think Sarr can do that as well. Like, I've seen him even do it for Spurs. Apparently, he's done it for Mets. I haven't seen that firsthand, but when he played more of a six for Spurs against AC Milan, that time where we had no midfielders.
Yeah, I remember that game.
He was very controlled, and okay, yeah, you could argue that AC Milan didn't necessarily put too much pressure on it, but I've seen Sarr's ball retention in the first phase sometimes. It's very, very good. Maybe some of his passing could be a bit better, but in terms of ball retention, being able to drive with the ball and being able to screen, which has been lacking in most of our sixes this season. Yeah, I still think he can do that job well.
Yeah, no, Bentancur for me, I think Bentancur is definitely the guy going forward for the rest of this season anyway. But like you said, I feel like with Bentancur at the moment, he is lacking that match fitness. He does seem to still have, like, I was reading up the other day, some people still take like a year once they've had the recovery from the ACL, it still takes a year or so to find that sort of that fitness and that sharpness that you had before, because he's still probably thinking every time he goes into those 50-50s or when players are coming at him, like, he's worrying about that leg. He's worrying about how it's going to feel and how it moves. And like I said, I feel like since he's come back, his off the ball work has been top level. He's been at where he needs to be. It's just on the ball, he's just lacked to be. He seems to be losing it a bit more than usual. Like I said, the control element of his game seems to not be there as much. But I'm looking forward to Bentancur next season and seeing him back at his best, because I only have high hopes for him. And I think that he's going to be such a good player for this club.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's our best midfielder, to be honest. So whether it be a six or an eight, I think he'll be the best in our squad at it. I mean, at this current time. I just think, like many others now, we don't lack a profile of an eight, especially with Bergvall joining and probably going to be part of the squad next year, unless we get him alone. So at this point, it's 2-0 to Fulham. The flow isn't broken at all. And then, we've already said Ange made a few changes, but they get a third through largely the same way. It was just a very sloppy set piece goal in the end. But I mean, the pressure told again. Like, they could have scored on the attack just before that.
Don't you think, like, set pieces has been a big problem for us defensively this season? Like, I did at the start of the season, it seemed to be okay, but as the season's gone on, the defending for set pieces seems to be really poor. And I know Ange has said this is Ryan Mason taking care of it, and that might be a reason why. Look, I'm not one of these people that are gonna a Ryan Mason hater or anything, because I know he has some people out there just criticizing him for no reason, and I'm not gonna sit there and do that. But the zonal marking just doesn't work. It's not worked for us. I'm not a fan of zonal marking, even when I played football myself. I've always been, look, man to man. Everyone marks their player, and then you have accountability. Because the problem right now with the zonal marking and what happens to us a lot of these games is, who's at fault for the goals? You don't know, because a lot of players are just standing in positions that they're probably told to be in. And a lot of people are ball watching. They're stuck in these rigid movements, and players are just getting outrushed, or you're getting mismatches with sizes, bigger players coming in, sort of out jumping, outperforming the smaller bunches of players. So it's been a problem for me, and especially for that goal in particular. You saw when the ball come in, I think they had six players and we had eight. Like, so we had quite a few. We had the box was packed out of our players, but once the ball gets to Calvin Bassey and he does that sort of takeaway, the shot over, it was really weird that whole goal, like the whole sequence of the goal, but the way he went to the left, sort of shot it, hit the post or hit Vicario. And then there was literally two or three Fulham players that were just free in the box, as because the rest of our team were either looking to go forward or just due to the positions that they were in with the zonal marking, they weren't in a good enough position to be able to get back in and sort of get in a good position to stop it from going in. So I feel like corners has been a big problem for us this season. As of recent, I'd say since the turn of the year, it's been even more. It seems like teams are starting to target us for that. So definitely something that needs to be looked into, because we're getting killed on them right now.
Yeah. Ryan Mason and Mal Jedinak. I keep forgetting his first name, but Jedinak. I think Jedinak might be on the defensive part, Mason the attacking part. But it is weird. I remember, I think it was Sai, just randomly asked me a question last year. Like, what do you think our defensive set pieces are like? Well, what are we? What's our plan? What's our shape? And I thought about it, and I was like, I've been looking at it, but off the top of my head, I only really remember we just partly zonal marking. We covered the dangerous players and we just send Kane out from the near post to attack where he thinks the danger zone will be. And most of the time it would work, but we don't have a Harry Kane anymore. Not only...
I don't think we have any early dominant players at the moment.
Well, Dragoo's in. He was meant to be that guy, but... Yeah, obviously he's still new, so I don't want to be too harsh on him. And it feels like whenever we have a problem, we'll plug that hole and then another leak will spring out of nowhere. Like before, it was obviously the Vicario being bullied on these set pieces, and that resulted in a few goals conceded. And Man City never beat us that way.
I think that come off the back of the zonal marking, though, as well, because a lot of people identified that we don't man mark. So if you get a player onto Vicario, our players are going to stay rigid in their positions and not move from them because they're expecting a ball to come in into the middle of the box. They're not doing, oh, yeah, look, that's my man. Let me go get him off Vicario and push him off. There was none of that. There was no one taking that responsibility on.
And, yeah, do you know what? I actually agree. I just don't have an answer to defensive set pieces. I mean, I'm average height. So whenever I played football, I was never really sent to do any kind of marking. I'd stand on the post and hope nobody noticed, to be honest. So for me personally, if I had to, then obviously I prefer the man-to-man. Or maybe that's just the Italian in you, who knows? But
no, do you know what it is? I was a centre-back, so I sort of my position was I'd command the box. So when I'm in there, and I used to get, if my manager made me do zonal marking, the way I used to get caught out because the ball would come in the box and then sometimes you're just sat there like, I need to stay in my position. You've got like their four or five players doing, you know, when they have those set piece routines, they're going to run, do a little one player to the front, one player to the back, two into the middle on the attack. And you're just sat there like they're getting the momentum whilst you're waiting for the ball. You've just got to hope that it comes into your position, because if it goes over your head and one of your players ever miss it, you don't like, you're not prepared for all the situations that happen. Rather than with a man to man, they're going to come out, you're going to be with him, you're going to be tugging his shirt, you're going to be making sure he don't go nowhere. And it's just that 1v1 battle. That's all you need to focus on. Instead of focusing on like the position, the ball, trying to watch everything happen, just focus on your 1v1 battle and making sure that you get to the ball before this man. I think it's just, it works out easier. But again, like I said, it might just be the Italian in me, man.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think now. There's so much nuance with set pieces these days. I mean, this is probably why Arsenal are top of the league, that they're attacking set pieces, as much as I hate to say it, especially the corners are phenomenal.
Really good.
Through their routines. And then we saw in the Carling Cup. You saw in the Carling Cup, obviously, this is still mostly zonal marking anyway. And then you'd have one centre-back just actively looking to just block off runners. And then I don't think there's like a clear-cut rule against it in the rule book. It's just down to the referee's interpretation, and then you just live and die by the sword that way. And sometimes it can go for or against you, and then like 3 days later, same referee let Man United get away with it, but not Liverpool. So I feel like we don't really have kind of any nuanced set pieces anymore, even though we could probably just recycle VOs from last year maybe, but again, we haven't got a Harry Kane to put those away. Defensive set pieces wise, yeah, I don't think we've managed to plug all of the holes yet. As for what the answer is going to be through Ange, through Mason, through Jedinak, I don't know. But we have, yeah, especially since the turn of the calendar year, we've been dreadful, especially defensively. I'm trying to think how many set pieces have we even scored from this year?
We've not had, well, I know we've obviously not penalties and free kicks, taking them away. We've not really had anything from that front. Corners, I'd probably say, yeah, we don't ever get any. I think, what, we had one this season?
Yeah, we should have had one through at Crystal Palace on Werner. But
Werner, yeah, 100%. That was a clear cut. But yeah, no, I think we've probably only got a handful, maybe three or four goals. Like at the start of the season, we did have a few goals that were trickling in from headers. And I feel like we've been dangerous on the attack on corners, but there's also been games where I've seen us have 8 or 9 corners and absolutely nothing, like no danger. I think the last game we had like that might have been Aston Villa, and we didn't threat them from corners. Like we have so much, and Porro's so good at putting the ball in the box, but like I said, we just don't have the players to attack it.
Yeah, that's completely right. I'm just trying to think, like, that it wasn't even directly from a set piece, but I remember that's how we got our win at Kenilworth Road, Luton. While we were down to 10 men, just a short corner, Madison spins, cut back, goal. Can't really think of anything else. Maybe we're just too scared to be called like Burnley 2.0 or something. And yeah, there was a point before the Christmas break, like even Arsenal, again, I don't want to keep on mentioning them, but they had scored just as many set-piece goals as they had open play goals, and it was still surreal. Yeah. But yeah, it just goes to show, again, just how important they were. Anyway, we're obviously 3-0 down. We've made more changes. And yeah, it's hard to really gauge it because, well, 3-0 down tax. They've obviously had to take off Muniz as a precaution through to a knock as well. How do you think we ended the game though, with kind of substitutes coming on, obviously Richarlison, Lo Celso and Werner?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm still thinking about the time when they went 4-0. Like, my head was absolutely gone when they scored that fourth goal. I was literally willing to smash my TV. I was like, there's no fucking way they're pumping us by four. And it was so comfortable. It wasn't like, the thing is about this game, and as the game wore on, it wasn't like we didn't, like they were getting lucky. Because there's games like West Ham, Aston Villa, when they beat us, you're just like, this is just so unlucky. Like you're watching it, you can't fathom how they've scored their goals. But this game, Fulham deserved every goal they got. They worked really hard for their goals. Yes. And even the fourth one, it was a really well worked goal. They put the ball forward, it come back, found Paulinho, who then finished it in, and luckily we got caught with the offside. But to end the game, I think Bentancur come on, sort of gave us a little bit of control. We started to move the ball a bit better and started to find some rhythm in our attack, similar to sort of when Brighton, I think they were 4-1 up or 4-1 up in that game. It reminded me of that, and I did have sort of thoughts. I was like, oh, like maybe we can come back, because we were doing some good attacks and we were actually catching Fulham out. And we had that one chance where Johnson put it across and Werner just showing him his Chelsea self.
I was in good form as well. It's scary.
Yeah, scary. That's what I was thinking. Like, even in his good form and he's feeling confident, he's still going to miss those chances. Like, I can't bear it. It was one of the easiest chances you could have put in. He just needed to... I don't know how he got it. I was watching it thinking it went over, but it went wide. And yeah, it lost to me. But I feel like we ended the game all right. We definitely could have scored a goal or two, but it's one of those ones. We have a bunch of attackers that we've gone from having one of the most clinical attacks in the world to having three players that don't know how to put the ball in the back of the net. So it's a tough watch. It's a tough watch at times because Johnson, Werner, they both could have scored, but it's what it is.
Yeah. Another point. Well, I ultimately agree with those as well. Good to see Lo Celso get some minutes and not get injured as well. Because I genuinely think he can be useful. So, like, just 20-minute cameos, like, here and there. Yeah, as long as he just stays fit. We saw I feel like we talk about him every week on every pod and throughout most of the group chat conversations is about Kulusevski, and I missed him playing in the middle.
Like, torn in the middle, the fan base are about him proper.
Yeah, it's, you can kind of see why. We still see his chance creation numbers still high, but where I felt like he struggled on the right again against Fulham, as did the whole team. So I can't be too harsh on him, but as soon as he moved into the middle, in the first 2 minutes of him playing on the right hand side of centre midfield, that first 2 minutes was better than the rest of the game. It was weird. Like, he straight away was linking up with Brennan Johnson and Porro, quick attacks, quick combination play, and like, we looked really threatening down the right hand side just through like small periods. And again, you can say 3-0 tax, but I think that just might be Kulusevski's best position going forward. You know, even though I think there are tweaks which can make Kulusevski work out on the right hand side, it just doesn't seem like we're going to make those tweaks.
Yeah, no, I get you. I've actually always liked him on the right hand side. I know a lot of people haven't, and I've been a big fan of him. But I was watching something come out on the Spurs channel yesterday. He's doing like, it's like a Kulusevski masterclass where he's going through his goals and he's having a little interview. And he actually said there himself that he prefers him, like, he sees himself going forward playing in the middle. He thinks he's better in the middle, and that's sort of where he started off his career, and that's where he'd like to go forward. Like, that's sort of where he finds himself and thinks that he plays his best. So I definitely think when he does come in the middle, he has some great attributes, and it makes sense because we see him in there and he sort of has the freedom to go left, go right, and he's not forced to cut in, because the problem with him out on the right is he can be too predictable at times. He looks like he shows himself that he's going to do the cut in, and if Porro is not doing the overlap, it makes it easy to defend. But me personally, as you would know in the group, I'm a massive fan of Kulu. I'm a Kulu supporter. I think that even in his bad games, like you said, he is one of the most creative players we have, one of the guys that are always going to bring the ball up the pitch, and especially when we're in these games where we get pegged back onto a low block against the tough teams, he's the man that will pick it up from Porro from deep in our half and start driving the ball forward. So I feel like he's one of those undroppable players for me at the moment, obviously on the right. But then, like you said, when he does come in the middle, I think he does some really good work. And I think it is something that we should look to do potentially against, when we play these lower sides like a Luton game. This is a game where we should do what Ange done against Villa that time, where you put Benzkur, Kulu, Madders all in the midfield. Put Johnson out on the right, Werner on the left, or whoever it is, Son on the left. But let them work together, because going forward, that midfield's just going to create too much problems. And I think if you give Benzkur the license, just sit there in front of the defence, then it sort of works itself out.
What do you think of Ross Barkley as a six?
As a six?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't fancy him as a six. I think in, like, this season he's been amazing, by the way. The remontada from him, from all Chelsea killing him. I remember him back in the Everton days when he was literally a top prospect in England. He was an absolute baller, and he's finding himself again at Luton. It's like they just give him the license to control that midfield, do what he wants. And in the 10, sort of in that creative role, even like a hybrid eight, in that creative role, he does such a good job. But I don't think he can take another step up to a better team. I think he works in the smaller teams where he gets that freedom to just do what he wants. Because if you put him in, I don't know, a top six club or a top eight club, and he gets specified to just do a certain thing of his role and just pass the ball off and be surrounded by a few players that are going to do the job better than him, he's a shadow of himself. He shrinks in and he doesn't really express himself as much. So I don't think he can play as a six at a good club, but maybe for Luton, he could do the job. He does like the whole job for them. He's like an all-rounder.
Yeah, that's a very fair assessment, actually. I'm just still thinking back to that kind of pre-COVID. That first half of that Villa loan was pretty special as well. And I've always just been a fan of him, and people say we need a six. Ah, like he's doing this job at Luton this year, and still, while being positionally quite strict, he lets players kind of interchange those positions and still have a high element of freedom, especially for players like Maddison. I don't know. I've just been thinking it over in my head a lot because, I mean, there's not many good sixes out there. But I don't know.
Yeah,
we'll see. Yeah, it's very doubtful to happen, to be honest. But
yeah, I think the six is a tough position to recruit because, like I said, there's not really that many top-level sixes that you can look out and be like, yeah, look, there's a list of five players. You could choose from one of these and you're going to be set up. Like, you don't really have that at the moment. So we're going to have to be very shrewd in the market and trying to find something that will work for our system. But I feel like the key thing that we need to look for is someone that's just a complete destroyer in the midfield. You know, like a Wanyama, when we had him next to Dembele. We need a profile like that to be in our
midfield. So underrated he was, man, because people think of him and he was a very good destroyer, but he's, yeah, just his general and overall number six play. Like, he managed to carry the ball out very well. His passing was very good still. Yeah, what a perfect
He was such a good player before he had the injury. When he had that injury and he's just come back from it, he never looked the same. But he was a good player, man. He took us to the next level next to Dembele when we signed him.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's Pochettino's good signings. Wow. Got me feeling very nostalgic now.
Probably about 10 years ago now, man. It's crazy to think that.
Well, it works. Yes, it is. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, just summarising that Fulham game. Given the context of obviously having all of our players back now, obviously bar Van de Ven, was that our worst performance of the season?
No doubt, man. Definitely our worst performance. Because, yeah, as I said, it was the one game where I'd say Fulham deserved everything they got. Like, we just looked horrible in all parts.
Yeah. I was thinking that as well. But I was thinking we've obviously had a few. Maybe Chelsea at home. But I mean, that was just a different kind of chaos. It was just a really weird one.
That was more of like an implosion, like a lot of things happen. And like I say, it's a rivalry game. So we want our players to be extra aggressive in those games, probably a bit too much. But I did like to see that we started off really well. And even when we had 9 or 10 men, we still actually was creating attacks. We were still dangerous. And it wasn't an amazing performance, but it showed that our team had heart and that we could build something from this. This game, though, gave us nothing to look back on. There was maybe the only player that I actually thought played well was Romero was all right. I think he had a decent game and he's been in decent form, but obviously still he conceded 3 goals. So can't really point out a defender and say, look, he done a good job. Vicario is always a standout player. I think he's always a standout, just making some top saves and keeping us in games. And you know what? I'd say that, like, from when he come in, and I remember that first game, the Brentford game, a lot of people was getting loads of stick going, oh, I don't think he's ready.
I hated that so much.
It was doing my head in because it was like his first game in the Premier League. He's young. It's his Tottenham. It's a massive game for him. And he wasn't even bad. He just had like a shaky moment. He's been, for me, literally faultless, phenomenal. And I don't really look at him ever at any game and say, Vicario could have done better there. I just think that he's helping us overperform at the moment. And without him, we would definitely be a lot further down the table.
Exactly that. All right, George. Thank you for summarising our worst performance of the season. Yeah, I do agree with that as well. Like, I did feel a little bit more let down for the Chelsea game, but yeah, with the Fulham game, there were no redeeming qualities, and really and truly, we just didn't show up.
I was just going to quickly ask you before we do end, would you make any changes going into that Luton game, like from this XI, into that one. I don't know if Van de Ven's going to be back, so we can't really gauge that. But if Van de Ven's not back, what changes would you make to the team?
I would still keep Dragosin in because we've got to keep him playing games, getting him used to the team and our way of playing football, so just going into next season especially. If you're talking about a one-off game, then I would probably play Ben Davis. But we need that continuity. We need Dragosin to get used to the team, even if it is his unfavoured side. So I'd still start him. The midfield, I would still keep unchanged, but I'd still put a rocket up Bissouma. But just show your quality. Just show your personality, show your quality. Where, again, more about the intangibles. Like, we know his quality. He's just not showing his personality for me. Sar, ever-present and key. And then I'd probably bring Bentancur on for one of those two after about 55, 60 minutes again if it's not working. And I guess the only question would be on the left, because I'd still probably have Kulusevski on the right. Still small tweaks to be made to get the best out of him, because it's just not working that well. I'll probably still lean towards Brennan Johnson. I think Brennan Johnson, as it stands, is still our best left winger. And it's, I do have a soft spot for Brennan Johnson, and I don't want to be biased, but when it comes to actually receiving the ball to feet and taking on his man, the bar is through the floor when it comes to our left-hand side. And Brennan Johnson seems like the only capable one. We've got Werner, who can knock the ball past his opponent down the left-hand side, but nothing really comes of it, other than he might win a penalty, but it's doubtful because we don't get them. Or he can come inside and just do a little cutback. But yeah, I think Brennan Johnson's better in that regard. And then we've got Man of Solomon. I was going to call him something else then, but yeah. He's just gone in for surgery, where I didn't have high hopes for him anyway, to be honest. But it was said that he was about to return, and he's now gone in for surgery. Oh no.
Yeah, oh, no. No, it's just terrible. Nuts with that.
Is Brian Hill even injured, by the way?
I totally forgot about him. I thought, like, after January, because he put in some horrible performances, I thought he got loaned out, and then I just remembered he didn't. He's just not been used. He's just horrible.
Very easy to assume he's just gone back to Sevilla for a few months. Boy, yeah, he's completely fit. Wow. He should be making much more of his opportunities. Should be, that left hand side is so up for grabs. That's his favorite position, although I think he's personally better out on the right. I just remember him really disappointing me in that cup game against Burnley, where he came on and Burnley players just kept on committing themselves to him. All he had to do, he didn't even have to drop a shoulder. All he had to do was just knock the ball past him and just show his speed. But he couldn't even do that. He just kept on running into people. So yeah, he
looks like a kid playing men's football. Like, he just looks like the bright's too, everyone's too big for him. He doesn't look confident taking on any players. He hasn't shown any of his abilities that he looked really good at in Sevilla. And yeah, man, Brian Hill's just been really, like, I've been really, really disappointed with him, because I had such high hopes when we brought him in.
Yeah, mini Messi, they were calling him.
I would much prefer to keep our passion merchant in Lamella, man.
I can't. I'm so over Lamella. It's unbelievable. There was a question for me there quickly, but I mean, we'll ask us, well, us both. Papa Blake's and last thoughts on Rafinha. Let's say Barcelona.
I think Rafinha would do a really good job. I liked him before he went to Barcelona. I think maybe in Barcelona he's not form to the level that he was shown at Leeds, and it's Barcelona, and I don't feel like they've been that great overall. And I mean, Yassin Lamar has just been phenomenal at 17, just coming into that team and sort of showing himself, like, you can't really do much about it. But I think Rafinha would be a good addition to our team. It gives us the option to bring Kulusevski into the middle more often. But I also do think that it does depend on the price tag, because if you're looking at 65, 70 million, there's a few other players like Neto, and a couple of, I think, Nico Williams, maybe Kubo, a few others that I just fancy and I like a bit more because they're maybe a bit younger, they've got a bit more potential, and I feel like they're a bit more polished with their game and what we need with 1v1 attacking.
Yeah, I think Rafinha's quality can't be doubted. I would prioritise someone who will predominantly play on the left. If we were to sign someone on the right, by all means, I'd love Rafinha quality-wise. He's obviously a good goal threat. He can beat his man. But I'm always cautious of signing players who are, in their mind anyway, going to be taking a step down. Obviously, from such a prestigious club like Barcelona. I see they're not the Barcelona we've grown up to know, but they're still a very prestigious club, and you'd still feel like you're taking a step down joining Tottenham. So I'd have question marks about that and his wages, but quality-wise, I can't doubt it. And I'd have him over Neto for sure, purely based on availability. I mean, I haven't really kept track of Rafinha's injury record at Barcelona. I can't lie, but it's got to be better than Neto's. But yeah, that was my brief thoughts on him. I think that will wrap it up. Thank you, Papa Blankson, for the question. And thank you, obviously, for those who are still watching and have been watching. And thank you for George, aka Durag Diaries, for joining me on this fine Friday afternoon. I hope you enjoy the rest of your from home shift.
I will do. Thank you, man. It was a good stream, bro, man. Good stream of you. And hopefully next time we do it, we'll be on better terms, talking about a win, you know, celebrating a bit more.
I think it will be, but I don't want to get too confident, too Spursy. Yeah. Let's see. Well done for repping this. Well, what year is that shirt from?
This is just training top. I think it might be last year or something. Okay. It's just one of the training tops.
Okay, yeah. I was going to say the top half of it kind of looked a little bit 03, 04-ish. But...
yeah, like really, really old school. Yeah, no, but it's just, yeah.
Fair enough, fair enough. All right. Again, signing off now, just a quick shout out to the socials, New Spurs Order on X, Twitter, TikTok, Instagram. Obviously, we've got content coming out there on the weekend over the international break. So, yeah, keep a lookout for that. And, yeah, for now, for the next stream, peace. Take it easy.
Yourself available too. Present the cross, looking for Thomas!
Yeah.
And this is opened up for Madison! A thing of beauty! Johnson. For the sixth goal!
Podcast Network.